Good morning. My name is Adrian Vandenhoven. I'm the Director General of Medicines for Europe, and I'm really pleased to welcome you to today's webinar, which is devoted to Beneath the Surface, the Essential Role of Generic Medicines in Ensuring Security of Supply. Today, we're going to have an exciting debate and presentation on a study that was done on the role of generic medicines in public health in Europe. Before I begin the presentation, I'd like to just make a few housekeeping rules. So we're going to have a presentation followed by a panel debate, but there will also be an opportunity for the audience to participate in the debate by sending their questions online. So if you would like to send questions, you can do so through this Slido code that you can see up here on the screen. I would appreciate it if you would indicate to whom the question is directed. If not, I will have to pick one of the panelists. So while the Slido code is up there, I'll just introduce our panelists for today's discussion. First of all, we have Max Newton, who's the Engagement Manager at IQVIA, and he's going to present the study that he led on the essential role of generic medicines. We have Arnaud Maillas, who is the Head of Public Affairs at Sandoz, one of the biggest generic medicines companies in Europe, and the head of the Generic Market Access Committee at Medicines for Europe. We have Erik Sverson, who is from the Nordic Committee on Medicines Procurement, and they are leading in looking at solutions for security of supply of medicines in medicines procurement, and hopefully contributing to the European discussions as well. We also have Laure Gesselin, who is a team leader in DG Santé, the Health Directorate of the European Commission, who is working on market-related and supply issues for medicines, and also on an important procurement guidance for the EU. Finally, we have Valérie Paris, who is from a senior policy analyst at the OECD, who is working on an OECD report on supply chain security for medicines across Europe. So now that everybody has been able to connect to the Slido, I'll just talk a little bit about today's panel. Generic medicines are an essential component of public health in Europe, supplying around 70% of the prescription medicines for patients in the European Union, playing a very, very vital role in public health. I think everybody is aware that generic medicines are also essential for the financial sustainability of healthcare systems as they drive a lot of savings into pharmaceutical budgets. But over the last few years, a series of new policy issues related to generic medicines have come to the fore, such as shortages of medicines and how to ensure security of supply in healthcare crises, as we experienced, for example, during COVID-19, but also looking at how to improve access to medicines, where there are still wide differences, wide gaps between smaller countries or less well-off Central and Eastern European countries compared to West European countries. There are also issues about how to improve health outcomes through more efficient use or changes to existing medicines to deliver better public health for patients. So we're going to discuss all of those issues in today's panel. And to begin with, I'm going to hand over to Max Newton, who's going to give a little presentation, a summary of the study that he has produced. Max, over to you.
Thanks very much, Adrian. So the study that we're going to be talking about today has been published as of today, so you can read the report in your own time. Following this discussion, if you haven't seen it already. And it's entitled Beneath the Surface, Unraveling the True Value of Generic Medicines. And the reason for titling it like this and essentially creating the study the way we did is to say we appreciate that savings are the core component or the core value of generic medicines, but in changing times, it's important to understand where generics can play a broader role and also to give a much more, I think, a central view of the benefits that they can provide across public health and to speak the same language as we're now talking about in a post-COVID era, things about access, supply chain security, and so forth. So if you move to the next slide, the way we started this study was really by looking at how the development of the view of generics has changed over time. And I think it's important to note that this has been a significant change where originally, say in the early 80s and early 2000, or sorry, between the early 80s when that industry really started to generate, the market was seen as something where companies were almost opportunists. Now we're looking further on, where we're seeing that generics generally are seen as a really important savings provider that permit value within the system, free up budget for further innovation in a cyclical approach. They're able to advance patient access by massively increasing the amount of treatment volume to patients in instances where loss of exclusivity has occurred. And therefore, I think it's important to take this kind of longer term view and say, well, how has the market shifted? And what should we be looking for to the future? So there's a little bit of history in the back of this, starting in the paper that you can read in full. The way we then went on is to say, what is the kind of new dimensions of the value of the generics market that we should be thinking about? And we've touched on these very briefly, but I also think it's important to say that this type of work has been done in the past, and some of the points that came up are ultimately need to change over time. What we're now talking about is, yes, savings, but also in kind of this modern era, the importance of the economic value that generics can provide, the ability to predict budgets in a long-term basis, to have a sustainable view on spending over time, to then support access, to increase supply chain security, and to provide a level of innovation within the European market. So the way I'm going to run this on the next slide is then to take these four value dimensions and walk through each of them, showing some of the analyses that the study investigates, and then really coming to a conclusion at the end where what we will say is there are a number of challenges that now emerge. We don't have the answers to these, but I think that's really where the panel discussion starts and where the study will leap off from. So starting with economic value, it's important to take a look at, if you go to the next slide, it's important to take a look at what the market looks like at the moment. This is a kind of standard IQVIA chart set to really start things off. And I think two main points come out from this. Firstly, to appreciate just the relative share of generic medicines in the European landscape. They are 70% of all European medicines by volume and 19% by value. The generic medicines that we see in 2024 are increasingly complex products. We're no longer talking about simple small molecule type pills. We look for, say, hypertension. We're actually having more complex generics that treat a broader range of going into some lower volume, rarer conditions. So coming back to my first point, how the market moves on is important to appreciate. Second thing I want to talk about on the next slide is then, as part of this economic value point, that in many instances, the view of generics has been around the short-term savings at the point of loss of exclusivity. So once an original brand loses exclusivity, then generic market will take over. The economics of that market are you will get 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, sometimes 10 competitors that will generate significant savings. Now, that's well understood and well known, but I think in very few cases do we get to see a very long-term picture. So the left-hand side shows you the view of the top three therapeutic areas as they were in the year 2000. That's cardiovascular, antibacterials, and cholesterol, for example. I mean, you can do this for many others, but for the purpose of this illustration, they represented at that point 37% of the total pharmaceutical expenditure in the European economic area. Fast forward 23 years, they're now down to 8%. So the dynamics of the market ultimately mean that countries are able to have a predictable view and a sustainable pharmaceutical spending level because of the way the cycles work. That, moving on to the right-hand side, should continue into the future as we see that these major European markets have been dominated by small molecules in the past, more or less. But now as the biologic market continues to mature, this figure is expected to fall from 75% small molecules to about 50% of the loss of future loss of exclusivities. However, that's still a huge number. Also, given some of the other important dynamics that we're seeing versus the biologic segment, small molecules are more likely to attract competition, meaning that generic entry is going to continue to generate a substantial saving in the future. And we think this figure is going to be nearly 20 plus billion by 2027, which is double the impact of the previous 6 years. So as we talk about the economic benefit, let's talk about, on the next slide, we're then talking about how does this impact patients and public health. Well, one of the examples that we've chosen, one of them in the white paper, is how does that impact co-payments? In order to get a great example of this, you need to really look where co-payments matter. Co-payments don't necessarily matter in all markets in Europe, but in Latvia, you're looking at some of the highest co-payments in the EU. And at a certain point in time, meds in 2016, for example, co-payments were about 21% of the total cost of pharmaceuticals in that segment, with 36% of all health expenditure paid out of pocket. So a big amount to begin with. At this point, 2020, there's a set of measures that are coming into play to reduce patients' co-payment. One of those includes the provision to permit to increase generic usage via mandatory INN prescribing. In the 6 months following this, this is where you start to see this chart on the right-hand side showing that the co-payments decreased by 50% while the volume of generics increased by 23%. So not only are you making savings, but you're also increasing access at the same time. So that reduction is actually even more significant. That's the economic side. And I think that's really a kind of twist on generics generate savings. It's generics generate a economic value that is increasingly important at the current moment where budgets are consistently constrained, under pressure, reallocations are searched for, savings are searched for, and a more reliable long-term forecast is necessary. The next piece of the puzzle, to go on to the next slide, is the second section, which is to say, okay, so if you make savings and you can view your budget long-term, well, and you can make savings to co-payments, for example, what is the other major value dimension that we should be talking about? Well, it's definitely access to medicines. We can talk about access to medicines in a number of different ways, whether it's reimbursement rates, but for generic medicines, access is volume. Access is how many patients are treated, how many pills, vials are dispensed. And so if you move on to the next slide, this is another important long-term analysis that we've done. And I think that's a note to make throughout this is this paper has been looking back over a much longer time frame than other studies that we'd seen, and I think that's a good differentiator. We're looking here at two separate time points. We're looking back to 2005 on the left-hand side and from 2011 on the right-hand side. Two separate studies, one IQVIA historic and one a little bit more recent. They're the same thing, and they're looking at seven major therapeutic classes that have just significant generic competition. It's called the seven therapeutic area analysis. And what it shows is three things. It shows how the price develops over time. It shows how the total spend in the market develops over time. So that's ultimately a view of the budget and the number of treatment days, i.e. patients treated. So those three lines diverging show you price decreases, the overall budget impact falls, and the number of patients treated goes up significantly on an indexed basis. These core seven therapy areas in 2000 were subject to the highest generic competition and have continued to provide savings while treatment volume has almost doubled. That's what the index really shows, and what I want you to take away is this is the core, one of the core benefits. But what we see on the next slide, I think, really brings this to life, which is if you take a particular example, I think it's useful to then show this with a little bit more granularity to look at segments of a therapeutic area. We're looking at anti-ulcerants on the left-hand side, is to show that how does the value total value of the market change over time, impacted by generics in blue, impacted by products that are losing exclusivity in dark blue, new brands, i.e. that's the kind of next generation set of products, and products that are protected in dark green. So moving top to bottom, you can essentially see as the curves go across at the top, the value of the market, i.e. the total budget impact, increases just as generics start to come in. And then as generics come in, that total budget impact falls dramatically by 59%. At the same time, the volume is increasing 145%. And we look across the bottom to see, well, how does the price change? Well, that price change has developed minus 83% over this 20-year period. For this discussion, I think it's really important to give you an indication of this is the European view. But actually, on the right-hand side, what we're showing is that not all countries take advantage of this. We picked three therapy areas where we see big, interesting numbers, so big savings, big volume declines, big savings, large volume increases, and big price declines, and did a simple heat map to show where, you know, where we should be seeing kind of greens across the board. And looking at anti-ulcerants, cardiovascular products, and anti-cholesterol medications, so very kind of a particular niche group of therapy areas, but very large therapy areas at the same time, you see there are some countries that haven't necessarily been able to increase the volumes. So they've generated savings, the prices have fallen, but volumes have not. Or prices have fallen, the value of the market has remained the same, given the still usage of the originator brand, for example, and volume has not grown relative to others. So the point we're trying to make here is, you know, in some cases, there's still one opportunity left on the table from historic brand, from historic opportunities. So you move to the next slide. We're still talking about the dimension of access here. And one of the points that we wanted to make was, yes, in some big major therapeutic areas, the benefits come from generating vast amounts of additional access. But also, let's see, how does this truly link to kind of outcomes? And it is certainly difficult, and I think not necessarily responsible, to directly attribute a health outcome to a medicine without a health economic assessment, which is relatively rare to see. However, in the EU, when we're looking at new HIV infections, for example, they've fallen by about 45% since we've seen the first branded pre-exposure for prophylaxis treatment, or PrEP, which was licensed in 2016. There's also naturally the points around, you know, education, awareness of the disease and preparation and things like that. But the point we wanted to make here is that in countries that are generally underserved by originator brands or are underserved through their healthcare system, what you can actually see is that the generic medicines reduce that disease burden significantly. So left-hand side, the two charts on the left-hand side represent Western Europe, two charts on the right-hand side represent Central and Eastern Europe. What we essentially show is when generic PrEP enters the market, you can see a significant volume increase and a notable decline in the infection rate seen on the top corner. And what I think is important about that is to really appreciate that when a cheaper, more available product comes into the market, that can have a massive impact in countries that are underserved, while it still has a significant impact in Western Europe. But that disparity is important. We've seen other examples. So significant hyperretention-related mortality declines in Germany shown. But I think the most important point here is to say that this is just one example. And what we can expect to see is this type of dynamic continue to happen in the future, should the market be managed appropriately, to say that generic medicines can do this for future underserved markets, say, for example, hepatitis C, where we still see challenges in treatment provision while brands are currently protected. The third, if you move to the next slide, just briefly, is to say the third value dimension that of generic products, I think, is really Now, our hot topic at the moment is the supply chain security provided by generic medicines manufacturers. And if you move to the next slide, one of the things we considered was the support for supply chain resilience. And I think this is a really tricky type of discussion to talk about because it's very easy to misinterpret. And our point here is, firstly, one, we understand that shortage information in general can be easily misconstrued and has issues around it. However, with a process of cleaning, what the picture that comes out is the majority of shortages are for multi-source products and not single-source products. Innovative and protected product shortages are relatively rare in the grand scheme of things, but shortages in the generic segment actually operate differently to those in the protected segment. With off-patent products, with multiple manufacturers, there's the ability to redistribute stock, to meet demands within a country that's experiencing a shortage, and in cases where you have complex shortages with few suppliers, volatile demand, or ultra-low prices, these dynamics don't necessarily always fill the gap, which highlights the benefit provided by a healthy competitive environment. We think that while supply chain security has become a focus around the world, with medicine shortages becoming increasingly looked at for patient critical therapies, the role of generic medicines in bolstering the supply chain is being increasingly recognized and their contributions have grown. The right-hand side shows us if you're looking at the number of shortages in the multi-source segment, so take that light blue bar and investigate it essentially, we're saying that 66% of those shortages are associated with instances where there is a supply count below 5. So a healthy multi-source market, i.e. with a good competitive environment, with multiple players, actually serves to mitigate and manage short, is one of the factors that helps to mitigate and manage shortages around Europe. Now, shortages are naturally a complex intertwined topic, but I think this is an important finding to say that a kind of broad set of options can reduce the impact of shortages for patients. The next topic we looked into is still on supply chain security, and we're looking now into, if you move to the next slide, we're looking into one of the approaches to manage shortages, which is critical medicines list, or the critical medicines lists that exist in different markets. So investigating the recently launched European Commission list of critical medicines for major events or public health emergencies, looking into those, 92% of those are generic medicines. We see that the list does include innovative products and generic medicines across a wide range of therapy areas, including significant numbers of antibacterials, oncologic pain therapies, and together represent about 40% of all generic medicines included in the critical medicines lists. We have looked into this at a country level because we know that countries also have their own critical medicines list, and this picture is broadly the same. Generic medicines are a major component of patient critical therapy when it comes to this type of approach to managing shortages, preparing for crisis situations, and managing Europe's ultimate resilience. So generic medicines really are essentially a core component, and that we see on the right hand side, not only that, but they're actually in many cases the only provider of a product 20 years after loss of exclusivity. So not only, and I think these two things are linked, because what we're saying is at a certain point in time you are reliant solely on generic medicines. Now, for those thinking straight away, well, you know, substitution has a role in that. So if you have generic substitution, then certainly, you know, it's an automatic kind of rite of passage that the originator brand might leave the market because there's just less opportunity available. And I think that's a fair comment. And we're looking into essentially showing that after 20 years, just the importance and reliance on generic medicines is a significant share, some 20 years after. And at a certain point, you start to see an inflection where originator brands leave the market and leave everything to generics companies to manage. So this is all a full picture saying, if we're understanding supply chain resilience, if we're understanding supply chain security, we have to appreciate where generic medicines play. The last section, section four, if you move to the next slide, is one of the smaller value dimension. One of the things that I think we need to take into account is the role that generic manufacturers play in innovation. Now, this is, I have to caveat, is that obviously innovation comes from most from the innovative industry. However, that's not to downplay the role that generics play in two important components, which if you look on the next slide, I will talk through. There are a couple more in the white paper to look at, but I think they also link into, at least the first one does, links into supply chain security quite nicely as well. So you can kind of see this thread walking through, which is the generic manufacturers continue to invest in Europe. And what we've been looking into with the support of Medicines for Europe is how many manufacturing sites there are currently, how many additional projects are underway to expand manufacturing sites. And this naturally varies from, you know, significant multi-million dollar projects to kind of smaller upgrades, for example. And the point here is to say that the companies support innovation both directly through savings that are then used to fund further innovation, but also by innovating in things like manufacturing, product improvements, or other types of practices like environmental practices have a wider patient or societal benefit. And on the right-hand side, we give a couple of examples of these on the value-added medicine side, where we're looking at a couple of products that have been innovated upon after loss of exclusivity. So the point is to say, yes, there is a level of innovation that occurs after loss of exclusivity, even if the brand comes up front. And we're looking at things like instances where products can have superior efficacy or reduced side effect profile or ultimately become an improved therapeutic option. These savings, from our perspective, it's important to say that the savings can be deployed to cover the cost of newer innovative medicines, providing standards of care and improving health outcomes. And the process itself permits innovation as payers are able to reinvest back into new innovations in pharma, health tech, or staffing, or whatever it may be. And if the pressure is only on costs without necessarily the recognition of the true role of generic medicines, then this innovation potential might not be maximized into the future. Which brings me very neatly to our set of conclusions and key questions at the end. We don't pretend to have the answers, and we're really interested in opening these for discussion in the next few years as this develops. If you go to the next slide, you know, our key findings that we're talking about, just to summarize, are the value from the generic sector is not just short-term savings, but also that long-term ability to forecast, ability to know what can be prepared for. Secondly, to generate significant savings and massively increase patient volumes where volume has been restricted in the past, to ensure redistribution, mitigate supply bottlenecks, for example, continue to invest, and to provide a level of innovation catalysm. So we leave you with five tricky questions, which are first being, how do you essentially optimize what is still left on the table from past loss of exclusivity opportunities, but also think about the future in order to keep that cycle moving very neatly? How do you keep access to smaller volume products that are ultimately less attractive to retain on the market, but still valuable treatment options? This is a real link to, I think, some of the antimicrobials that we see, where they're just very, very small niche products, but remain a long-term challenge in terms of commercial viability. The third is, how can you support a greater supply chain security? What's the implication for providing things like, you know, a stockpiling approach, broader management of future shortages, linking this to reshoring? And then lastly, how can the economic and societal value be translated into a marketplace that looks sustainable for the future? And if you move to the last slide, this is then to say there's a QR code where you can read the report, look in detail and full into all the analyses, understand the study parameters and the sources used throughout.
Max, thanks for, first of all, doing the study, but also making a great presentation today about the key results. Maybe before we move to our audience, I just ask a quick question. What was for you the most surprising data point that you discovered through the study?
For me, I think it was the access growth. Now, we spend a lot of time, at least my team spends a lot of time talking about the biosimilar side and talking about biologics and that access growth. But looking over a 20-year period and seeing, you know, 150% growth in many markets, 400% growth in some cases where you had a very small starting point, for example, I think was probably the most surprising for me, especially when you couple that with the price reductions.
Excellent. So tremendous value in terms of improving access to medicines. Now I'd like to quickly turn to our panelists to have a quick reaction to the report to see what they thought of the report and the presentation, what they thought were some of the compelling elements for them. Maybe we can start with you, Laure Gesnin, to figure out what did you think of the presentation and what was a compelling piece of data for you? Oh,
thank you. Good morning.
Oh, there you are. Okay. Yeah, we can hear you now.
Okay, apologies. And thank you for inviting me today. I think, and thank you, Max, also for this excellent overview of the report, giving a very good understanding of the value that generics can bring. I think what's striking me the most, and it is, of course, confirming what we know and see in reality, but I think the number of the shortages being associated, the 66% of shortages being associated with less than 5 suppliers on the market is a very important conclusion of this study. And I think it's only reinforced the need to see how can we ensure that we find solutions where several suppliers remain on the markets. And you know, from the Commission, we're doing quite some work around the challenges of security of supply, trying to see, starting from the union list of critical medicines, where generics are, as laid down today, a very important proportion of the products on that list, trying to see what are the different vulnerabilities in the supply chain and how can we address those and ensure that we have sufficient suppliers and that we can avoid shortages at all times for these medicines. So for me, that's, I would say, the main takeaway. Of course, adding to that, the way that generics can increase access to patients is very important. And as Max said, it's very similar to what we see in the biosimilar sphere. So it's we shouldn't focus only on the cost savings, but also how generics can broaden access to patients. Thank you.
Thanks, Laure. Indeed, I think having an actual data point confirming what I think a lot of people believed about the link between shortages and consolidation is certainly very interesting. We've had a lot of data points from the United States, but now to have one clearly on the European market is valuable. Maybe I can turn to you, Eric. You're doing a lot of work for your own country, for Norway, but also in collaboration with Nordic countries. What was a compelling piece of data for you from this study and presentation?
I think we can state the obvious that the value of generics and biosimilars is unquestionable on so many levels, both financially and other. So I think we have to thoroughly investigate how we can ease the regulatory access within Europe to work on better and more secure and stable supply, and work so that also new innovations in generics, for instance, I like to bring up ready-to-use products and others, come into the market with greater ease, but also in the smaller market segments so that we don't miss out products like we do in so many cases today.
Indeed, there's the challenge of even though the European Union market is quite big, it nevertheless is fragmented in some sense. So the efforts to defragment that and to create greater opportunities is of course important. And indeed, some changes, I think the industry has to play a role in helping the healthcare systems with some of the challenges, like let's say some of the challenges around hospitals, et cetera, being overcrowded or under a lot of stress. Maybe Arnaud, I can turn to you as well to get the industry perspective on what you thought was a compelling piece of data from this study.
Yes, thank you. Thank you, Adrian. And thank you, Max, for the excellent report and the excellent presentation. I think, I mean, overall, it's not just about the money. I mean, that's for me, that's the key message out of here. And really, the off-patent industry is central to the not just the functioning, but really healthcare system, European healthcare system could most probably not work without our industry because of the savings. I mean, we knew that, but also the supply. The supplies is really central. I mean, there's a number that strikes me all the time. It's not in the IQVIA report, but it's public data from a German trade association. About 80% of the medicines dispensed in Germany, our largest generic market, our supply for just 7% of the total cost of medicines. So this is, I would say, probably the most striking example in Europe. And also, more than that, as Max said at the end, after loss of exclusivity, the generic medicines rapidly become the only option available. Up to 40% of all patent products are only available as generic medicines. So again, I think for me, overall in this report, what we have the confirmation that the generic medicines, they are really central to most healthcare systems in Europe. And I think this is the starting point for a number of policy discussions and also for the discussion today.
Okay, great. Well, look, after this presentation, I think a quick reaction to the reports, I'd like to turn now to our panel debate because each of our panelists is engaged in one way or the other around different policy avenues, policy reforms, which I think can address some of the challenges, some of the questions that Max has asked at the end of his presentation. And maybe what I'll do first is turn to Laure once again and ask a little bit about what the Commission is doing. So Laure, as we discussed and as you reacted very much to the study, there is this link between shortages and, let's say, the reduction in the number of generic suppliers over time. The Commission has engaged in a number of different policy fields, but I'll ask for a little bit of commentary on one of them. Notably, one of them is to introduce an EU guidance on medicines procurement. As I understand it, one of the objectives of this new guidance is to help stimulate more suppliers, to help reduce a little bit this consolidation effect, with the intention, of course, to increase the security of supply when it comes to medicines procurement. Of course, almost all medicines for hospitals would be procured, so these would be often very critical medicines, but there also can be procurement outside of the hospital setting. So maybe you could tell us a little bit about this work on EU procurement guidance and what kind of impact it could have in the future.
Okay, thank you, Adrian. Yes, indeed. As part of the communication on addressing shortages in the EU that was adopted by the Commission in October last year, we committed actually to issue guidance on public procurement and specifically on how procurers and policymakers in the field of procurement can use that as a tool to actually support the objective of security of supply. So that's really the purpose of what we want to bring forward with this guidance. But it doesn't come, I would say, as a surprise, because actually we already initiated quite some work around this topic, and we published a study on optimizing public procurement of medicines that looked even broader. So it didn't just only look at how procurement of medicines can be used to support security of supply, but also for environmental aspects, increasing competition and supporting affordability. And from that study, we actually, of course, that study confirmed that the way medicines are procured in the EU varies a lot across different countries. So the organization is very different. As you said, in some countries, procurement is mainly focused in the areas of hospital medicines. But then in other countries, you also have the outpatient sector with a lot of procurement. Sometimes it's centralized, sometimes it's very local, etc. But what we saw, despite all these variations, is that in most countries, we still see that contracts are awarded to a single winner. And putting that in light with the data, the numbers we saw from IQVIA, where shortages are experienced more often when you have a lower number of suppliers, we can, of course, say that this is a challenge and an issue that we want to address. Another aspect we've seen is that a lot of the tenders today, the main criteria being used there is still the lowest price criteria. So the focus of procurement is today still to try to reduce the cost without really having a more strategic approach, looking at how procurement can also be used to achieve certain other objectives. And we've seen that one in four procedures for medicines are actually awarded using the MEAT criteria, which are the most economic advantage therapeutic criteria. So there it's stepping away from just the lowest price, but that's only one in four. So I think there is a lot of opportunity there to use the procurement as a way to increase security of supply. And the different ways that this can be done is, first of all, you need to have a strategy in place in terms of which objectives do we want to achieve and how can we manage the different trade-offs and balance the different objectives. But then there are different tools that procurers can use, one of which is using, of course, specific criteria related to security of supply. Others are more related to trying to award your contracts to more than one winner, and also joining forces in procurement, because if you procure together, your market is bigger, so you may attract more suppliers if you want to procure to more than a single award. So that was, I would say, the outcome of the study. But then we felt that procurers on the field and policymakers in that era really still experienced challenge to put that into practice, because it comes with a lot of different questions in terms of if you have different winners, how will you manage the fact that you have different prices on your market, how will you attribute to market shares? So very concrete questions. And that's why the Commission intends now to bring forward a best practice toolbox. So it's not a binding, legally binding toolbox, because we recognize that procurement is organized at national or regional level, but it brings forward, or that's the intent, to have a series of practical examples and tools that can be used by procurers, best practice examples, very concrete examples that can be used to be implemented in practice, hoping to, with that tool, bring a shift in the way medicines are procured compared to today, and therefore supporting security of supply. Thank you.
Thanks, Lo. That's a great overview of the very complex work that you're engaging in. We've had a little bit of trouble connecting Valerie to this call. I just wanted to see if, Valerie, you've managed to connect now.
Yes. It's not ideal. Do you hear me?
Absolutely, yes. We hear you. So it's great to hear your voice, and it's great to see you as well, connected, I guess, via your phone. But thank you very much for the effort in joining us today. Valerie, since we have you connected, I'm going to immediately jump in with a question for you, put you on the spot. Maybe what I'd like to know is, so the OECD is also working on this issue of supply chain resilience, especially in the post-pandemic period, where it's been a challenge, I think, for a lot of industries. But given the particular importance of healthcare industries, let's say a high priority for medicines. So what is the work of the OECD, and how does it, how will it impact, let's say, a reduction of the risk of shortages?
Yes, we published a report in February, a report on which we've worked with the trade division of the OECD, so the health and the trade division together, to try to get a better idea of the causes of shortages, but also to try to recommend some policy options to improve the security of supply. The first thing I would like to say, because I had the chance to, I missed the first part of this meeting, but you sent me the report in advance, mm-hmm. is that it is very important to have information and data about what is happening, because what we failed during this the preparation of this report is that we don't have enough evidence-based information on the root causes and of shortages, the analysis of risks, and also the evaluation of all the strategies that countries are implementing. And all this evidence is very important, because if you want to do the right things, you need to have the first diagnosis. This is why I really welcome the report you presented today. One of the things we recommend countries to do to improve the security of supply is to increase the visibility of the supply chain. What happens in the manufacturing process, also in terms of flows and volumes of goods which are transferred between sites and between countries, but also what happens in the distribution chain. So this is something we really think is important, especially for critical medicines. But if I want to come to the subject of your meeting today, which is mainly about what to do perhaps with policies with generics and off-patent medicines, we really insist on the importance of procurement mechanisms, and I will not come back to this because I understand that Laure already covered the subject, and I know that Eric is here and will probably speak about that, but pooled and strategic procurement are really tools that can help to better predict demand, to have more wise methods to procure medicines rather than relying on only the price of the medicines, to make sure that we diversify the sources of supply. And the diversification of supply is also one aspect on which we insist a lot on this report. And this can be achieved through strategic procurement. And this can also be achieved by expanding and diversifying the production capacities, manufacturing capacities. Many countries think in terms of reshoring today, and this is something we've looked at. And again, we lack a lot of evidence about what happens when we reshore activities, but we know it is more expensive if you try to produce in Europe than everything that you produce in other countries. And I think nobody thinks about reshoring everything. It would just be impossible and not efficient. So we really need to think in terms of strategic options if we want to reshore some activities. But we need also to think in terms of expanding supply in other regions, in Africa, in the whole world, actually, because what we face also is a huge increase in worldwide demand of medicine. So this is one of the recommendations of our report. I will stop here, perhaps, because we have many other recommendations about trade facilitations and regulatory not flexibility but arrangement, some efforts in regulatory harmonization to make sure that products can be traded between countries with less barriers without compromising security and safety for patients, for sure. And but so maybe I will stop here and let you continue. I'm happy to respond to specific questions if you want.
Sure. Great interaction there, and we'll come back to some of these questions. Maybe before I hand over to another speaker, I'd just like to react to one of the points that you raised. You talked about the visibility of the distribution chain as well as the visibility of the supply chain. During COVID-19, we had an experience with a surge in demand in 2020 for intensive care unit medicines, as you know, a lot of patients were hospitalized due to the COVID disease. But one of the things that took us by surprise there was that basically hospitals, I would say the majority of hospitals in Europe, had no information on their stocks, even of very, very critical medicines. And we had to work with the European Commission and benefited from a kind of competition law exemption, if you wish, to be able to make these calculations ourselves as industry. So, you know, one of the things that I wonder, are there discussions in the OECD about this almost total lack of data in some areas, such as in hospitals, where it's ultra critical actually to know in a crisis what's going on? Do you have any, has there been any discussion in the OECD on that, Valerie?
So we propose in our report to envisage the use of the unique identifiers that we have in most countries for medicines. This system has not been implemented for that purpose. So, but for the purpose of fighting counterfeiting of medicines. So it's not the system is not tailored for that purpose. But we suggest that maybe, at least for some medicines, and this is something that needs to be examined very carefully. But we have the means to implement a monitoring mechanism, perhaps only for some drugs. Perhaps we don't need to collect information on every drug and every flow within the system. But I think we could work on that to make sure that for critical medicines we know where they are and if there are some, because this is very critical to know if we have some medicines somewhere that can be transferred between across countries, across healthcare settings. I think it would be very useful to manage to prevent and manage crises.
Definitely. I think that's an interesting idea. And actually, we have considered a component to that anti-counterfeiting system, which would be specific to hospitals because of how they operate, which might solve several solutions there. Maybe also reacting to Valerie's statement, I'll turn to you, Arnaud. So Valerie was mentioning the need to diversify the supply sources, procurement, et cetera, which also Loas touched upon. But she also talked about the manufacturing. Now, there's been a lot of information in the news about Sandoz, for example, continuing to invest or upgrading its production of certain antibiotic medicines here in Europe. But despite the challenges, I think I would say around the, let's say, the sustainability of investing in antibiotics production due to the, let's say, the market challenges there. So I'd like to learn a little bit more about how Sandoz sees this issue about the need to invest, the need to bring more supply and diversification on one hand, the responsibilities that you have as a manufacturer, and on the other hand, the challenges that you face in the market, which may not always reward you for those investments.
Yes, thank you, Adrian. It's a complex question, so let me try to split my answer. I think what we see is that we still pretty much live in Europe according to rules that were devised almost 15 years ago with the financial crisis, and basically austerity programs, cost containment measures that put together have delivered for healthcare systems in Europe. Patients got access. I mean, Max described this super well, but also healthcare systems got the savings and the budget optimization and also the predictability on a big part of their spendings on medicines. Nevertheless, the pandemic now has shown that not everything is about the price. And that the value that the off-patent medicine bring is much goes beyond the pure saving and just the money, and very much includes the security of supply. So I think there needs to be an adaptation of old rules to the new reality of security of supply. And most probably, because these old rules were super successful, it is a problem now. I mean, this success is kind of the problem of today, and the race towards the lowest possible price has made more and more players exit the market, meaning that some medicines are simply too cheap on the market, that production is no longer worthwhile. And also just supplying these medicines in Europe is no longer worthwhile. I mean, it's a cliche, but unfortunately, it's still pretty much the truth that a very basic antibiotic like amoxicillin, a box of it in most European markets is priced at less than €2. And this is really too cheap for the complexity and the quality requirements behind this production. And I mean, again, going back to the presentation and the report, 2/3 of shortages are linked to products that have less than 5 suppliers. That's in the IQVIA report. But also this week, another member of Medicines for Europe, Teva, came out with a new report where they show that 70% of generics marketed in Europe have fewer than 2 suppliers. So this is really where the problem comes from. So to your question, Adrian, and also to what a company like Sandoz is doing and other companies are doing, obviously, there's a lot to be done on the price mechanism, the pricing and reimbursement system, the capacity to adjust the prices. And part of it is the design and the criteria applied to the procurement of medicines. But Laure, Valérie, and I think Eric are going to discuss that part. But it's not just about the price. I think it's really about how do you incentivize more players to come on the market. And I would say there are in Europe a number of existing manufacturing capacity. Again, the example of Sandoz with the largest fully integrated manufacturing of penicillin in Europe is a good one. We invested to remain cost competitive, and we got the support of the Austrian government to be able to do that and to increase capacity in terms of final packs augmented by 20%, so which is massive considering already the scale of the production. And I think that's super important. And I think also what is important is not just about reshoring, because reshoring can be extremely expensive. Rebuilding a capacity facility plant like Kundal would cost up to €3 billion, when an investment of 200 million already delivered extra capacity that is needed. So it's really, I think the focus should really be on the support of the existing capacity in Europe and safeguarding what we have. And also, because it's not just about the price or the money of the medicines, I think the regulatory framework is very important. I think there is a level of complexity today in Europe in terms of the number of presentations, the fact that we still have to put a paper leaflet in each and every box that we deliver, that these boxes are pretty much different from one market to the other. And I think the pharma review is an opportunity, and I think we really have to seize it to go through a real simplification of the market. Again, this would allow us to remain competitive, to produce at a larger scale for less. So that's super important. So I mean, maybe to conclude here, I think the launch of the Critical Medicines Alliance, the work of the OECD, or the way that a country like Norway procures medicines gives also the good signal that we can work and again change the current rules. And because what we've seen is that if we only focus on the lowest possible price, at the end, we just lose the benefit of the supply, of the access, of the innovation that we as an off-patent industry are bringing to healthcare systems.
Thanks, Alno. So we understand that if you build on the strengths of the manufacturing sector in Europe, you can relatively efficiently, relatively cost-effectively improve the security of supply. Of course, for that, you need sustainable markets down the line. Otherwise, those investments will not work out. I'm just a little bit of a point of order again. I'll just put up the Slido code in case people want to ask questions from the audience, that they can connect with this QR code or this code, and you can ask questions to any of the speakers. So while people are looking at that code, I'm going to turn to Eric. So Eric, there's been a lot of discussion about security of supply, how to change, let's say, the market structure. You're one of the actors of this market structure as essentially a buyer of medicines, responsible for public health, responsible for security of supply. But there are even other responsibilities that are coming up, such as a responsibility in relation to improving the environment. How do you manage all those different components while still trying to get a fair deal for the population, the insured population that you're delivering medicines to?
Yes, thank you, Adrian. Good question. Back to the price issue. We procure medicines for Norwegian hospitals, about 1 billion euros per year. And antibiotics, as has been mentioned here quite a few times, is about 10 million euros per year. The value of those products is 2, 3, 4 times that. And we should be willing to pay for that. In Europe, public procurement accounts for about 14% of the GDP. In Norway, it's 70 billion euros per year. So this Green Deal transition, the amount of money that we can put towards a more sustainable output is tremendous. And it gives also then a tremendous opportunity for European business, also in the generic pharma industry. And securing our supplies will take focus over the years to come. So hopefully you have started planning for this already. And the Critical Medicines Act and the critical medicines are a very big part of our strategy and EU pharma strategy, and it will be important to achieve green goals within those critical medicines. But I think in order to secure that, you have to go back to also the fundamentals. In primary care, it's launch a product with a price. There are no clear expectations to you. You have no obligation to deliver. If you had a procurement contract in all segments, also in the primary care sector, with sanctions and rewards, I think that will also increase the likelihood of a stable and good supply. And back to the hospital sector also then you have to have robust organizations like Sykehusinnkjøp in countries to be able to handle meet criteria with environmental points in it. Otherwise, it will just be too big a risk for a small pharmacy to develop criteria and to face the potential litigation from the industry. So I think a more resilient system on our side to face industry will give a better outcome for all involved. You can harvest the benefits, lower prices where you need to, but also pay more where you also need to pay more.
Thanks, Eric. I'd like to turn back to Lo. So Lo, I think we're hearing from Eric quite a positive response and quite a modern approach to changes. But as he indicated, this requires also certain systems, certain organization in the country as to how the medicines are procured, or even maybe in some cases for pricing and reimbursement. How do you deal with the need for some kind of collective response to security of supply or other challenges like environmental sustainability, and the reality on the ground of the member states that you're working with that are organized in very, very different ways. How do you overcome that light challenge, I would say?
That's a very challenging question you put there, Adrian. But I think we have to recognize, of course, that certain aspects like the organization of procurement, pricing and reimbursement, things that were discussed and brought up today are beyond, European remit. It's a national competence. So the impact that we can have there is mainly coordinating, bringing together the different actors to exchange best practices like we do specifically on pricing and reimbursement, for instance, in the group of national competent authorities on pricing and reimbursement, where the interplay between policies on pricing and reimbursement and security of supply are being discussed, and the cooperation is also looking into those specific aspects. Specifically for procurement, like we do with the guidance, we really put forward tools, we coordinate, we encourage the change of practice. In the context more broadly, with a lot of things that I've heard here already, actually, having a better overview on the supply chains, for instance, monitoring data on stocks or forecasting the demand. I also heard the need to have multi-country packages to overcome certain regulatory challenges or the burden. I think all these things are brought together in the pharma package that we've put forward last year. And we really do think that that will address already many of these aspects. But in complement to that, as you know, the Commission also put forward a communication on addressing shortages in the EU that also puts forward a set of actions that go beyond a purely regulatory framework, but also bringing together, for instance, now I can refer to the alliance that will be soon launched, bringing together all the different stakeholders and looking at how the vulnerabilities in the supply chain, the things, the challenges that we see today can be overcome, maybe with industrial policy measures that complement the regulatory measures that we have put forward already. So I would say, to respond to your question, it's really this holistic approach, combining the complementarity of both what can be done at EU level from a regulatory perspective or more industrial policy measures at EU level, together with coordinating and bringing together the national competences and trying there to encourage and exchange best practices. Thank you.
Thanks. Max, I'd like to bring you back into this discussion. Arnaud mentioned the issue of the sustainability of the markets to enable companies to continue to invest in the supply chains, in the manufacturing, et cetera. I think maybe one of the challenges also identified in your report is that you may have generic medicines, they may be the only option available. They may, you know, be experiencing a relatively small volume or a declining volume, but still very important to public health. You know, what is the future of those kind of products that are somehow declining, but still really critical for some patients in the European market?
So that's a really interesting point, because we've heard recent instances where you have very small volume products that have been under considerable price pressure for a number of years and sometimes have left the market. But what we have heard is the deal that I think needs to occur more often is instances where naturally the instant solution is that is to have an increase in price level. But at the same time, from the payer perspective, you also need to get something back. So what we've been seeing is discussions occurring around for very small volume products that are, you know, at risk of shortage or at risk of being taken off the market due to lack of kind of commercial viability, a price increase that is supported by perhaps in some instances a greater visibility of stock provision, for example, has kind of been a nice a balancing approach to ensure that products stay on the market when they are essentially one, patient critical, and two, less commercially attractive at the moment.
Thanks. Valerie, I'd like to also come back to this issue. So a little bit like law, there's a great willingness, I think, in the OECD for cooperation among OECD countries. Some of them are European, but you also have non-European countries in the OECD. So there's this great interest in cooperating on improving security of supply, addressing some of these issues collectively, or at least understanding the problem collectively. But at the same time, there's a lot of somehow competition between OECD countries as well. Maybe it's due to this lack of visibility of what is going on in the market, but we see sometimes some knee-jerk reactions as well. During COVID, we had a lot of export restrictions, which wasn't easy then to move the medicines to where the patient need was. We see now a lot of mandatory stockpiling, especially in some European countries, which then has an impact on their neighbors. What is the thinking in the OECD about, let's say, solidarity or cooperation versus trying to secure the supply only for your own country?
What we highlight in the report published by OECD is the fact that stockpiling strategies, for instance, can be counterproductive and would be probably better if they were cooperative at a regional level, at least. But this is an ideal that perhaps can be achieved in Europe, perhaps more difficult in other regions. It's difficult to approach, but that's true that stockpiling must be really sought strategically to not increase the difficulties that we observe in supply chains. And if you allow me, I would like to react to the question of market conditions and price and insist again on the fact that I think solutions must be tailored to the problems faced in different regions and countries. And we need a clear diagnostic to be able to respond to find the right response to the problem. Most of the evidence about the link between prices, shortages, and number of suppliers and trends in markets comes from the US, and even there, where the pressure on generic prices can be very high, you have some markets in which prices continue to increase, and it really depends on the type of product, the profitability of the product, and so we should not try to to assume, for instance, that prices of generic are always too low. It's probably not true, even in Europe. And if countries think about in terms of price increase, which can be justified in some circumstances, they should do that carefully, perhaps with conditions like Max was suggesting earlier. But also within Europe, there is a danger if one country alone increase the price, it can with parallel trade and other incentives also for manufacturers themselves. It can also incentivize manufacturers to move the delivery of drugs from one country to another without improving the whole supply, which might be needed in that specific case. So it's. I think we really need to think carefully about all of this, and about the environmental impact of manufacturing. I think this should be also considered very carefully because you can see contrasting views about, for instance, reshoring, which is not the solution for everything, as I said before, but if you consider this option for in some cases, we will have trade-off between the cost and the environmental requirements. And for companies, it might be difficult. But one solution probably is also to improve requirement or to have the same level playing field in terms of requirements in the world to increase, so that it becomes less interesting to produce in countries with less constraining requirements.
Great. So I'm going to ask for a reaction here from Eric and then from Arnaud. So first to Eric. Eric, you're working in a smaller market, part of the internal market. How do you see this issue of cooperation and competition for supplies between the countries of Europe, and what are the ways to somehow achieve this solidarity so that medicines go to where the patients are, as opposed to different stockpiles?
Yes, difficult question to answer. I don't think we will get past stockpiling. We had a big report in 2019 in Norway that showed on average that we had 2 weeks of supply of critical medicines in Norway. And of course, that is unsustainable in so many ways when you know the supply situation of many drugs, not only generics and biosimilars. So there is a need for greater certainty. But I think, as I was talking about earlier, a lot of the secret lies in contracting. When we tie down contracts with industry on most of our supplies, and we had requirements on our own storage and supplier storage, minimum storage, that then output improved. And I think this is a need that we cannot surpass. I think we will have to see more drugs in countries so that you have a stable situation for your population, because you, as a government, you have to think of your patients also. And it's just a question of who should pay for it. And I don't really see the practical issues of it. We have a 3-year contract on generics, and we require 3 or 4 months of that to stay in Norway at any given time. But it is the same procurement. We pay for those 3 years, and then three or four months of those will be in our storage facilities, not in Europe somewhere, because we want to have control in the short run of the supplies.
Thanks. Thanks, Eric. I think that's quite clear. So there is a possibility then through the contracts that you have with manufacturers to find a balance, I would say, between on the one hand achieving a good price, and on the other hand ensuring that you have better security of supply. Arnaud, your company is one of the biggest suppliers of medicines in the European Union. But at the same time, I think not all of the situations are as described by Eric. There's also a lot of mandatory requirements, let's say, for stockpiling in different countries, etc. How is your company adapting to this new reality? What are the challenges to that?
Yes, that's true that inventory or stockpile obligations come in very different forms, and also have come in very different obligations in the past 12 months with new requirements in Germany, in Poland, in the Czech Republic, Austria, if I'm correct, has also notified a new system to the European Commission. I think first the challenge is that for sure, the off-patent industry today has, reached the capacity. So building additional stocks up to 6 months of stock in the case of Germany, which is again the largest market. So 6 months of stock is extremely significant in terms of volume. This is a challenge. And if we want to build this stock, and we have to build this stock for new contracts coming on, where do we take the volume from? That's the first question. Do we divert from one market to the other? And then what is also the form of the stockpile? Do we stockpile at the API level, the active ingredient form, the bulk level, ready to be transformed then into pills or bottles, depends on what we need, or in the final pack? But then the final pack has a very specific requirement depending on the country. The leaflet is in one or two or three languages. And what happens if we don't need it? Who pays for it? It's a lot of waste, potentially. If it's antibiotics, it's not good for the environment, it's not good for antimicrobial resistance. So I think overall, there needs to be more coordination and also discussion into what do we need? Do we need the capacity, the production capacity? And do we need solutions where we can reallocate the stock where it's needed? I mean, to Valerie's point, I think there's been a lot of studies also in Europe, and the Technopolis study that the European Commission sponsored before the launch and the presentation of the pharma review is a good one in terms of data and to also assess the weaknesses of the supply chains or where shortages come from. Again, I think that there's a lot of rigidity and complexity into the different presentations, and also we get regulatory flexibility when we need them. Where do we really need to have so many months of stock in each and every market in different forms? Or do we prefer to have more coordination and solidarity between the member states, and who pays for it? I think that's a little bit the question. I don't entirely have the answer, but I think the more rigidity and the more cost you put on the industry, the more you go into the difficulties that we are facing.
Thanks. I'd like to also ask for a reaction from Laure on this question. Laure?
Thank you. I'd like to echo what's being said, actually, in the terms of, we know that when stockpiles are there and a shortage occurs, that this can really help to bridge the supply and mitigate the shortage even before it actually arises. But we also know that stockpiles in one country can affect availability in the other countries, especially when, depending on the obligations, those stockpiles have to be built rather quickly. So the companies have to source medicines that were initially intended for other markets, and that can lead to situations of shortages. So I think it's important here that you need to find the right balance between those two different elements. And that's also why in our pharmaceutical reform, we actually proposed a very tailored approach to stockpiling, where we look at more on a case-by-case basis, looking for critical medicines, having the possibility there to put an obligation to hold contingency stocks, but only if really it's necessary and not a general obligation somehow. And in parallel to that, as we announced in the communication in October, we are also developing an EU common strategic approach to medicine stockpiling, with the aim to exactly look into the questions being raised here and trying to find an answer and a way to help member states to coordinate these different approaches at national level. Thank you.
Thanks, Laure, for that. But is there not a contradiction a little bit between what I think are excellent initiatives at the EU level? So it doesn't just involve the Commission, but the member states are also participating in this same reflection. And the reality that we're seeing many initiatives in certain countries, I'll not mention Germany, but I can say the same is the case for France, for Poland, for Austria, and there are several others doing this, that's going in the opposite direction of that strategic reflection. So, is there some kind of schizophrenic reaction, I would say, between, on the one hand, a European-level discussion based on some kind of solidarity and balancing of this, and on the other hand, individual laws or actions by member states which seem to go really in the opposite direction?
Well, I think you're being maybe very impatient and eager to see what the strategy will come up with. But that's exactly the thing we want to look into and address, actually, the fact that you have different strategies at national level, but that does impact other countries as well, other member states. And so that's the purpose of the whole strategy. So we're not there yet. Of course, we need to have those discussions, but you're exactly pinpointing to the situation that we've seen today and that we want to look into.
Great. Thanks for that. So actually, I think we look forward really to those discussions. I think they're actually critically important for security of supply and for this EU solidarity going forward. So unfortunately, we're coming to the end of our webinar. So I'm going to ask each of our speakers maybe to have some closing remarks and maybe looking forward to what we can do to address the below the surface value of generic medicine. So maybe Max, I'll start with you, and it would be good to hear your reaction to some of the panelists on this. And maybe one interesting point you could raise here is the point raised by Valerie about, let's say, the pricing policies around generic medicines and what could be done there to link this to security of supply. Max?
Sure. So I think that my big key takeaway from today is it's really interesting to see, looking back over time, how the perspectives on generic medicines have changed. Studies talked previously about the importance of improved medicine adherence and the economic impact that's provided by generic manufacturers in certain countries, but as well as outcomes and access and things like that. And this whole discussion today from all panelists has very much taken one of the main points that we wrote about, which is security of supply. And I think the focus of the discussion really shows just how important that is and just how important the generics medicine segment is to ensuring that remains a solvable problem in the future. The point around pricing of generic medicines over time, I think, is very interesting, because one of the things we've seen has been how shortages do have a correlation to the relative price level, but completely taking into account the knock-on implications, I think it's really important to understand where a strategic price level decision might be made for small volume molecules, for example, like antibiotics. I think that's my quick summary of today's session, and thank you very much for having me.
Thank you. Maybe, Valerie, I can turn to you. So you've presented certain key elements of the OEC study. You've raised a lot of questions. Where do you see the OECD going forward in this reflection?
We really hope that we will be able to continue to work with countries on this question. We have engaged in meetings and dialogue with governments, but also with companies, to try to find approaches that can be useful for everyone. And we also try to think beyond OECD, because the as I said before, the world demand for medicines has increased, and we really need to envisage the issue or the question at the broadest level as possible. And so we are looking forward, yes, working for more cooperation between countries and with companies to better to really improve the security of supply. I think we can find solutions to some of the issues if we all work together.
Thank you. Eric, I'd like to hear your thoughts on where you see things going. Obviously, you're working, I would say, at the cutting edge on many of these topics, such as procurement reform, security of supply, solidarity and cooperation. Eric?
Yeah, thanks. I think if we could get all countries using meat criteria in tenders, in put that in the European legislation, that would be a big hairy goal here. In Norway, it was put down in law, all public procurements from January 1st, 24 need to have at least 30% environmental criteria or similar to achieve this transition that we are going through, and to also motivate industry change and procurement change. It also shows that we are willing to pay more for this transition, which is very important, I think. But thanks also to the valuable and positive dialogue that we have with the industry, both locally and you guys in the Medicines for Europe and Amria and others, as we move forward and hope to bring on much needed system change, which is bigger procurement organizations.
Thank you. Thank you, Eric. So, Laure, I think Eric has set out an ambitious goal for you to achieve across the European Union. I hope you can deliver on it, of course. But in all seriousness, I'd like to hear your thoughts. Obviously, you're engaged fully in this work, both on the procurement side, but I know there's also a dialogue on the pricing and reimbursement side. How do you see the future in terms of looking for the added value of generic medicines in the system?
Thank you. Well, we focused indeed a lot today on the added value with regards to security of supply. But I think, as we heard in the beginning of this webinar, that it's much broader. It's the cost savings, the access, security of supply, and innovation. I would say that in to really pick the benefits of that added value, there are two main elements that I see. One is, of course, reducing the barriers to market entry, and with that, having a future-proof, robust, but also not too burdensome regulatory environments. And the second is, once the generics enter the market, ensuring that there's a sustainable environment so that they can stay on the market and that we have sufficient suppliers to ensure security of supply at all times and also in a longer run. And the response to those two elements, I think, can be sought also at different levels. One is, as I explained before, the European level with the pharma package that already tries to address many of these challenges, with the modulated system of incentives that would allow earlier market entry of generics, but also the changes made to the BOLR exemption, the reduction of the administrative burden, the multi-country packages, etc., etc. And then second, there's a more national and even for procurement, sometimes very regional or even local at hospital level policies that can also contribute to the more sustainable long-term competition. So I think we need to look at those really together. We cannot just look one separately, and all work together to have a very good environment that we can continue to have the benefits of generics in future.
Thanks, Laure, and thanks for mentioning that. Indeed, I think the Commission's pharma strategy, pharma review, is going to play a fundamental role in improving equity of access, of reducing that access gap in the European Union, and certainly that's commendable. Will work, and we should really devote more time to that in the future. It's excellent. Now, Arnaud, I'd like to turn to you to conclude from the industry perspective on today's debate.
Yes, thank you, Adrian. I think, that was a super positive debate for me, and what we've heard from the European Commission, the OECD, but also how Norway is willing to pay more to get security of supply. I think all of this is very positive. I think overall, what the industry is looking for is that there is a reward for the value of off-patent medicines, and this value goes far beyond just the savings. So it's not just about the money, and that's really for me the most important things. Otherwise, we're going to go into further consolidation, and maybe to Valerie. Point earlier, it's not just maybe the price, yes, but bad market conditions lead to players leaving the market, to more consolidation. And then when we have a problem, there is no backup. And I think this is what we want to avoid. And we want really to have a market that works for the off-patent industry. And also, I think we need to have the trust with the industry, and the industry needs to work with governments to fix the different issues and the different problems we've analyzed. But again, I think what we're looking for is a market that works. And I think for that, we start with the full recognition of what we bring as the off-patent industry. Thank you very much, Adrian.
So now I'd like to really close the meeting. So thank you to Max for doing an excellent study and also a wonderful presentation. And we encourage everybody to download that study and to analyze those compelling data points that have been presented to us about the beneath the surface, the value of generic medicines. I'd like to thank our really truly expert audience who are working on these issues either from a governmental perspective, from a buyer's perspective, or from an industry's perspective. I think we've really touched on a number of key policy and industrial and other challenges that are out there. I'd like to thank our audience who joined us today and who participated in this event virtually. It has been fantastic to have you. And finally, I'd like to thank the excellent crew from Euractiv, who's done an absolutely fabulous job at organizing this webinar and dealing with a few technical issues we've had here and there. So thanks a lot also to the Euractiv team. And I wish everybody a wonderful day. Thank you.